Tucson. Good morning to you and Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 10-3 The Voice studios. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, for this hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I have a full show today, back-to-back. Welcome on in. Looking forward to kicking off the Christmas season with Pastor Jeff Loxton, Hope City Church, here as we start talking about the message of this time and where our minds should be and insights during this time. Looking forward to that. We'll also talk a little bit about the New York Times article that came out over the weekend, Churches Step In Where Politicians Will Not. Why do we need acts of charity to rescue Americans from social difficulties, and how the church is stepping in. Jeff is our faith and culture contributor, so we'll talk some faith and culture. And then we will talk a little bit about, the balance of the hour. We'll talk about my new public policy decision-making matrix. We'll talk about the curfew discussion yesterday. Amber Smith, CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber, will be on to talk about her concerns that she sent the council on behalf of local businesses about the curfew as well. That is our show today. 790-2040 is the number you can call in to join the conversation. It's the number that our guest, Pastor Jeff Loxton, used to call in. He is in our live line green room. Jeff, welcome on in. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Zach. How's it going?
It is going good. So looking forward to, this is our first show here in December, and like so many communities of faith, a focus really shifts to the birth of Christ and what this season means for us in our lives. We also want to talk about, like I said, how churches are filling needs right now and how they can be places where our listeners can plug in and assist with so many needs during this season. But I'd love to kick off and talk about Advent. What does Advent mean? We hear this word a lot. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, the definition of Advent means the arrival of a notable person or thing. And in this case, for those, whether you're in a faith community or not, it's a season of generosity and a time where many people are celebrating the birth of Jesus.
We were on the phone the other day, and I was curious, you know, Jeff, what are you walking through with your faith community at Hope City Church? You know, you may share a message that is 20, 30 minutes long there. We don't have that time here. And so I was like, can you give me the spark notes, Pastor Jeff, the next few weeks of what you're walking through with your church? And I'd love to be a fly on the wall of what does this account mean to us in real life of this Advent, this arrival of a notable person in a very odd way for a notable person?
Yeah, you're talking about traditions and things that are important to people in the faith community, apart from denominational ties. I think some choose to celebrate that with the Advent wreath. We are looking at that Christmas story this year with a different twist, coming into or out of the election cycle, and really like a posture of prayer. And how is it, are we looking for what God is doing around us and listening to how we can be a part of the solution? That's kind of foreshadowing the next part of, or the next segment of our talk together. But in a nutshell, the Christmas story is Mary, a virgin who is betrothed in marriage, learns that she's pregnant. I'm imagining, you know, the shock on her face, like, how in the world is this even possible? As shocked as she is, Joseph is looking forward to being wedded to his fiance and finds out that she's pregnant. And imagine the shock that he has, you know, really, is, do I even hang out for this? What's going on? And then there's an angel that appears to Joseph, we read in Matthew 1:18, and reveals a bigger picture, and where he planned on leaving her quietly, which speaks to his character because there were consequences for actions like that in their culture. He chooses to stay with her, and Jesus, God in the flesh, is born into the world. And so for us, the season that we're in as a church is God is still doing miraculous things today. And how can we listen and pay attention so that we can be a part of that encounter in the day-to-day with the people God places in our paths.
Yeah, the conversation, as I understand it from what you and I have talked about off air, is, you know, your focus as this account begins is that Mary and Joseph had this unique encounter with God, which is an understatement. You know, for Mary, again, how are you pregnant when there hasn't been any activity to make that happen? And B, if you're Joseph, the cultural stigma of this is so different in that time than it is today. For him to, for them both to listen to God from this unique encounter was a huge step that really went above and beyond what was culturally required. But what does that encounter with God look like today as we are, you know, filling our, you know, virtual churches, as we are starting to, you know, see some folks maybe come back to some of our churches? Those are individual decisions. As people are processing this season, what does that encounter with God look like today? What role does prayer have in all of this that you are discussing with your church?
Well, I think even to recognize that we're not all coming from that faith background. And I think I didn't grow up in the church. I tell people I was hijacked for the role that I'm in now. And I think some of those most sacred prayers are the ones that are just from a pure heart, just saying, help, someone help me. I'm stuck. I don't see a way through this. I feel like, you know, Mary learns that she's pregnant. Joseph is trying to figure out what this means for their relationship moving forward. And I think that the sincerity of just a cry for help, prayer is conversational. So conversation's not one way, you know, none of us likes to be in those situations where the other person is talking and they won't give us a chance to share. And so the other side of prayer is being able to listen and cultivating a relationship where we can hear God speak is a part of the journey. And there's a verse that comes to mind. It says, my people hear my voice and they know it. And that was something that I have had to learn over time. It doesn't come readily. It's not an audible voice. That seldom happens. Sometimes it's just a simple thought. But I think the question in all of this for us, especially in a volatile election season, in a very traditionally hurried time surrounding Christmas and the events in our lives, is what things are distracting you and keeping you from hearing the direction that God wants to share for you in your life?
Yeah, Pastor Jeff, the reality is this season, we'll talk about part of this in the second segment, is a time of service and of giving, but often not a time of silence. I think there's few people that get to this part of the year and go, oh, this is going to be the quietest, most reflective time of my year. That's not, you know, 2020 might be a little bit more of that. But I think very few people are in this season processing, you know, what are those moments of reflection and silence and prayer that I need to be in right now to process challenges, opportunities, self-worth, all of that. Can you wrap up this segment by speaking to that and maybe what the call to action is that you are this week walking through with your faith community?
Yeah, I think silence often has been used by society to create a setting of punishment. You know, if you're imprisoned, it's you know, you go into isolation. You know, if you're a bad kid, you go into timeout. But I think silence, whether you're a person of faith or not, is setting the table for a powerful opportunity to just hear and gain clarity. What's next in this season of uncertainty or misdirection? So I think, you know, being able to say, whether it's 15 minutes or an hour or a weekend, being able to say, this is a time I'm going to set aside to go, to be alone, to think, to ask for insight on what's next and how to deal with situations that I'm faced with that I don't have clarity about. So I think, you know, that call to action is just to ask oneself, what things are keeping you right now from hearing God more? whether you're a person of faith or not, you know, maybe taking that challenge to sit and listen, and more tangibly, what is one thing that you can do to listen to God this week? Maybe it's take a walk. Maybe it's sitting in silence or journaling or even listening to a song. It could be talking to a friend or even just reading about the Christmas story from Matthew 1:18. But those are some practical examples that maybe might stimulate some thoughts for the people that are listening.
We're with Pastor Jeff Loxton this morning, our faith and culture contributor on the program, pastor of Hope City Church. For a few minutes, amidst all the politics, policies, issues, news, ideas that we talk about on this show, we felt that 2020 was a year where we needed to have a few moments carved out to process the big picture. But we have in that contributor phrase, faith and culture. I want to switch a little bit with Pastor Jeff when we get back and talk about the opinion piece in the New York Times this weekend. Churches step in where politicians will not, as this is a season of service and of giving. How are churches standing in the gap, meeting cultural and community needs, and how can you be a part of it here in Tucson? We'll be right back here on 1030 The Voice. Don't go anywhere.
Merry Christmas from all of us at 1030 The Voice. Stay tuned for more trusted local news and talk.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hot, then cold, back to warm. This winter looks to be a drier and warmer one with intermittent cold snaps. So it's more important than ever to make sure your heating and cooling unit is working well. Ultra Air Conditioning can help make sure everything's working properly, pumping clean and purified air in your home as we head into the holidays. Give us a call at 520-392-8008 to hear about this Ultra Care's Clean Air Bundle and our partnership with Ben's Bells. Don't go hot or cold this holiday season. Call 392-8008. Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is now open to you following COVID safety protocols. Experience the Arizona Biennial, featuring 86 emerging and internationally recognized artists in a variety of media. Shop at the museum store for unique gifts that will stand out this holiday season, from jewelry and accessories to housewares and art supplies, puzzles and games and more. Or give the gift of an annual museum membership to skip gift wrapping and shipping. Visit them at 140 North Main Avenue next to Cafe A La Carte.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Thursday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Hi, my name is Shanae with HR Resolve. Whether you are a self-employed individual or hire up to 35 employees, HR Resolve is your small business corporate office. We are locally owned, providing everything from general administrative and accounting services to payroll services and hiring. I started out just me, grew my company right here in Tucson, and want to help you succeed too. Call me and the HR Resolve team at 520-867-8384 to get started.
It's the holiday season, and Jones Photo is your partner for giving and getting the gift of great art and photography. Whether it's taking the best family photo this year or printing and framing great shots of the desert Southwest and urban landscapes as amazing gifts, Jones Photo is here for all your photography, framing, printing, and learning and education needs. Don't miss out on the season and support local. Head to jonesphoto.com for more information.
The Why I Love Where I Live team has one wish for you this holiday season: to find joy wherever you are. As a local retail store celebrating community, what better way to end a difficult year than by buying your Christmas gifts locally and giving friends and family reminders of what makes Tucson and our community great. From books to jewelry to clothing, hats, gifts for kids, and everything in between, visit the retail store this holiday season at 267 South Avenida del Convento or online at whyilovewhereilive.com. Hey, Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Good morning. Welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios. Picking right back up here on Tipping Point, daily in-depth news conversation and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Every morning drive time here, Monday through Friday, we are continuing with our faith and culture contributor on the show, Pastor Jeff Loxton. We were both kind of talking through and reading through this New York Times article titled Churches Step In Where Politicians Will Not. And there were some interesting lines in here, Jeff. I don't know if these stood out to you. There's a couple paragraphs. It says, and yet there is still something remarkable, almost miraculous. Although American Christianity is as impacted by the harsh tug of political poles as any other realm, acts of charity have managed to ally very different Christians behind similar causes. There was this really funny line in here that the great majority often of actual social programs are funded and executed by really frustratingly conservative, boring, historic, orthodox people, right? Which is tongue-in-cheek and not your position or my position necessarily. But the point being is that certainly during this time, but I think throughout the year, acts of service and justice and charity are quietly under the surface being joined into by very diverse people in American Christianity. That is something to celebrate. And I know that you see that, Pastor Jeff, and you execute that in your church. And so I wanted to discuss that here in this season as churches step in where politicians will often not in terms of caring for communities. How are you seeing that? How's Hope City Church being a part of that? How can we be a part of that listening?
Yeah, I think the article speaks directly to health insurance and health insurance on the rise. 67% of Americans worrying about paying for unexpected medical, expressing similar concerns about utility bills, 41% citing needs with rent and mortgage payments. And those are high percentages. I think Tucson being pre-COVID either the fifth or the sixth most impoverished metropolitan U.S. city certainly sets a stage for a lot of those needs. The kinds of things that we're seeing are coming from people who are not affluent. And so I think maybe one of those first awarenesses is, you know, whether you have tons of money or you have little to no money, can we begin to create disciplines where we stash a little bit of that aside and look for people or opportunities to be able to bless with those resources? It doesn't have to be exorbitant, but for example, this last week, the pantry had to shut its doors for quarantine and asked if we would pick up the slack in that. And we weren't sure where all the food was going to come from in a moment's notice, but there were churches from different parts of the city that pulled food together to help them out. But in the midst of all of that, there was someone that we just met who was the least likely to have the resources. And she was a part of distributing the food, just felt like I want to give $200 to get more food so that next time we do this, more people can be served through this opportunity. And those are the kinds of experiences that we're seeing. It's not just the affluent, it's people who have been disciplined to stash money aside and are just waiting for that right thing that tugs on their heart.
Pastor Jeff, there was this interesting line in this piece, again, out of the New York Times. Interesting read for anybody who wants to go back and find it. Charity must stand in for justice so long as the latter is in short supply. Pastor Jeff, I'm sure you hear it. I'm often in that space of going, man, I do want to care for people's immediate needs, but I'd much rather solve the problem. And it's probably a both and approach, Pastor Jeff. We're not going to solve all the problems, either at the root or the symptoms in one day, in one season. Do you agree with that line? Is that a line that you would love to lead your church in, that we're going to work for justice, but in an unjust community? And I think all communities have injustices. Charity must stand in as long as that is in short supply. Do you agree with that line?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think no one entity is meant to solve everything on their own. I saw a bumper sticker driving through town this last week that said, as long as there's a government that provides everything, that, you know, there's also the reality that that same government can take it all away. And so government is meant to work in partnership with the local church and non-governmental organizations. And I think, you know, even within the church, no one person is intended to do everything. We're designed to partner with each other, co-labor with each other to meet those needs. And so, unfortunately, I think the person that has this utopian perspective, maybe I have a little bit of that, would like to think that all of this goes away one day, but the reality is it won't, unfortunately. And so instead of being a person that likes to judge and evaluate other people for their positions, their situations, you know, how can I be a bright spot in their day just for this, just for the moment that I have with them? And I don't think that means we have to solve all those problems that come our way, but really discern, is this particular opportunity something I should do something to help in, and being mindful of those when they come.
From debt alleviation to poverty to hunger and so much more, housing, the church has and should, and I think believe will, continue to step up. Pastor Jeff, I got Tony on the line. He wants to make a brief comment. Tony, I've got about a minute, but I'd love to get you on and hear your thoughts. Tony, thanks for calling.
Hey, my pleasure, and thank you for having your guest on the show. Always a great show. Hey, you know, you're talking about solving problems. Well, poverty has always been part of the human condition, but what I think that we could do, especially with Pastor Jeff's organization, maybe other Christian organizations around the community, is to develop a plan where it would be 3 or 5 years where they would have a place or intake place, and not just dumping ground, but where they could have medical treatment for people that are veteran, that are suffering from post-traumatic syndrome or drug addiction or joblessness. And we drew that process and then assigned those people in an organized way where REBA, our mental health program here in the state, can really start getting more involved in actually creating a place, a safe haven.
Tony, I love it. I just wanted to give Jeff 30 seconds to speak to that. Tony, thank you so much. Jeff, I'm sure you agree.
Absolutely. And I don't know that we're too far off of that. I think organizations like John 17, Gospel Rescue Mission for Tucson are poised. If they're not already doing something, it might just be getting the right people in the room to say what resources are there and how can we align them in a way to address things like what Tony is talking about.
Pastor Jeff Loxton, Hope City Church, Never Enough Time. Thank you for your time this morning, and we'll see you throughout the month.
Thank you.
Pastor Jeff, thank you. Thanks to our callers as well. We'll be back right after a short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll talk some public policy.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 10:30 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hot, then cold, back to warm. This winter looks to be a drier and warmer one with intermittent cold snaps. So it's more important than ever to make sure your heating and cooling unit is working well. Ultra Air Conditioning can help make sure everything's working properly, pumping clean and purified air in your home as we head into the holidays. Give us a call at 520-392-8008 to hear about this Ultra Cares Clean Air Bundle and our partnership with Ben's Bells. Don't go hot or cold this holiday season. Call 392-8008. Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is now open to you following COVID safety protocols. Experience the Arizona Biennial, featuring 86 emerging and internationally recognized artists in a variety of media. Shop at the museum store for unique gifts that will stand out this holiday season, from jewelry and accessories to housewares and art supplies, puzzles and games, and more. Or give the gift of an annual museum membership to skip gift wrapping and shipping. Visit them at 140 North Main Avenue next to Cafe A La Carte. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point here in the 1030 The Voice studio. If you're just joining us, I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. At the end of the hour, the last segment, Amber Smith, CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber, will be on to discuss hers and the chamber's position on the curfew that was considered and voted on yesterday. The chamber submitted a statement yesterday afternoon before the vote. I want to talk with her about her concerns then and any continuing concerns about the curfew and its impact on the small business community and the workers and working families that both work and are benefited by having restaurants and places of business open at a certain time until a certain time. Lots of dynamics there. Want to speak with her about that. So we'll get that fresh opinion at the end of the hour. I want to talk about that topic as well. I watched the curfew conversation is about, I think, the first hour or so of the emergency session last evening. And I'll share some of my thoughts on that in a minute. But I want to go back a little bit big picture and talk about my new public policy decision-making matrix. I did not come up with it, but I'm translating it for this purpose. So there's this idea in the business community. It's called design thinking. And it basically has, I'll try to picture this, three circles, like a Venn diagram, right? Three circles that are overlapping, and there's kind of a sweet spot middle area that you're looking for as you are designing a solution for the consumer, for the market, right? And the three words are desirable, feasible, and viable, right? So you want to make sure that not only is it something that you want to create, that you want to do, that your consumers want, but is it feasible? Can it happen? Is it viable? Do people want to participate in it? And if you can get all those things to mush together, you'll get a sweet spot that is a higher rate of success. So this is the concept of design thinking. And I've been thinking about this throughout the year, and a couple recent decisions, the curfew included, have made me think that this might be worth taking out of just the business community or the design community and thinking about in terms of public policy. Let me give you an example of what I mean, and I'll back my way into the curfew situation. There was a recent decision that the Tucson Mayor and Council decided on to eliminate glass from a list of items accepted in curbside recycling program, right? So the thinking is, if we eliminate glass, you know, either we have drop-off sites that we reuse it or consumers reuse it, it gets us closer to our climate change goals, and it's just a better form of recycling and reuse. It's just better. It makes more sense. And on paper, you could make the case that is a desirable decision, right? If you are mayor and council, that is a desirable decision. The fact of the matter, though, is that once it hits the consumer, I don't think it's feasible or viable, right? I feel like I just, in the last couple months, figured out recycling. And maybe I'm calling myself out there, but I feel like I just figured out this goes in recycling, this goes in trash. So when you put forth a policy that says you can no longer put glass in your recycling bin, either you reuse it or we're going to have drop-off sites where you can drive your glass there and drop it off. Again, on paper, within strategic plans, within thought leadership, within thought work, I've had a lot of smart people say, well, you don't understand. This is the impact of glass on the environment and sustainability. And I'll say, look, I'm setting any merits of this aside. The question that has to be asked is this feasible and viable for the consumer? Are you going to get enough community buy-in where this makes sense? And the answer is obviously no. Especially in the short term. I mean, we talk about how do we serve working families? How do we serve our community of busy people, busy lives who have certain needs from our city? Those people don't have time to truck, you know, containers of glass to a third-party site in the city. This is a case of it is desirable, yes, but the sweet spot won't be achieved because it's neither feasible or viable. So how do you view a decision through that lens? So this is all the stuff going through my head, right? When the curfew discussion yesterday is happening. And the initial proposal on the table, right, was for an 8 p.m. Was it for an 8 p.m. curfew? And I thought it was really interesting in particular to listen to how Councilman Paul Cunningham, Vice Mayor Paul Cunningham, came into the conversation of basically asking a number of questions, right? We talk about being data-driven and science-driven and all of that. And he's like, look, I've looked at studies around the community, and I don't know what the difference is between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. You know, it's some, a lot of studies say it's negligible. I've looked around communities around the country. And he goes, and that 2 hours is vital for working workers and their shifts. So we're doing a curfew on theaters and bowling alleys and restaurants and bars and things like that, and placing a mandatory curfew. That 2 hours makes a world of difference. It's the difference between employment and unemployment. It's the difference between a shift or not a shift. It is a difference in all of the food that has already been ordered by restaurants, all the scheduling, all the planning that some of these places have been making for Christmas. That 2 hours is not negligible, but on paper, it looks negligible, right? It was interesting because a couple of the health experts that were on the call were asked by Councilman Steve Kozacik, well, you know, we've heard about a 10 p.m. curfew. You are pushing a statewide advocacy campaign to get the governor to do an 8 p.m. curfew. What's the difference? What's the science behind 8 p.m. and 10 p.m.? Why 8 p.m.? Why does that matter? They couldn't answer. There was no answer. And in my mind, if you're that far into a statewide campaign to get the governor to set a certain curfew for a certain time, to me, that's an important number that you have to know why it's 8 p.m. What is the science and data between 8 p.m. versus 10 p.m.? And there wasn't an answer. The desire coming into the meeting was for an 8 p.m. curfew. The feasibility and the viability, weighing competing interests, made a 10 p.m. decision, a decision that I think was the best decision given the circumstances. I was telling a friend, you knew we were coming out of that meeting with a curfew, right? I, like a lot of people, I want to have a discussion. Well, should we have one? Shouldn't we have one? I'm like, I'm a pragmatist. I knew going into that meeting, everybody did. We were coming out with a curfew. And we can debate the merits, and that would be a fun radio hour. I'm saying we knew we were going to get a curfew. 8 p.m. versus 10 p.m. And I think this keeps coming up with a pattern where I'm concerned that we're making a lot of decisions, especially during COVID, in terms of just one third of that equation I mentioned. Is it desirable? Right? There was a desire to set a tone, 8 p.m. There was a desire to lead the state, 8 p.m. There was a desire to make it 8 p.m. because the health experts said so, but we never knew why it was 8 p.m., speaking of facts and data and science. It was desirable, but it wasn't feasible. And it wasn't viable. And I think a growing concern of mine as I watch, and it's just not here, it's not just Arizona, it's just overall, we're starting to make public policy decisions based on what is only desirable, not feasible and viable, and doesn't weigh competing interests. And I think just, and this is just observational, right? This is just me doing my job saying, here's what I'm seeing, and here's what I want you to see, right? I'm just conveying what I see. Is that there were two different perspectives even on the city council. There was one that was, you could tell, was health focused, right? This is what is happening in the hospitals. This is what health leaders are saying. This is really the only perspective we're going to go off of. And you saw some of the city council members saying, well, wait a second, we really need to weigh competing interests. I think my growing concern is that we're not making public policy decisions based on that matrix. It's only what is desirable, not what is feasible, not what is viable. And I think good decisions come from finding that sweet spot, but finding it from weighing competing interests. And I think on one side of the COVID argument, we've only been weighing health, right? We don't weigh impacts on children. We don't weigh impacts on the economy. We don't weigh impacts on business. Or it's been all about business, and we're not weighing stress on healthcare systems, stress on families, and that. And I keep trying to say, I've been saying it for 8 months, is our sweet spot is somewhere in the middle. We've got to figure out how to balance health and economy. And I just don't see that balance effectively happening, and it needs to happen. And I got to tell you, I think one of my biggest concerns is that I think there's a lot of people who think this vaccine is going to be a panacea, right? We've got two philosophies of herd immunity in our community, right? Some say we need to open up and push through, and enough people need to get it to where there's acquired immunity, and that's a version of herd immunity. Some are saying we just need 65 to 75% of people to take the vaccine and we'll have herd immunity that way. I how many of you think that on the first go round, right, once this gets through healthcare workers and it's widely available, I don't see 65 to 75% of people taking the vaccine the first time around, maybe the second or third time. But there was a survey that 40% of Arizonans would not take the vaccine. You got to get to 65 to 75% for this thing to be widespread enough to where we can start opening up the economy. I don't see it. I say all that to say is 2021 is going to be a year of figuring out how to live with this thing. That's just the pragmatist in me. I am very doubtful that we're going to get herd immunity through a vaccine anytime soon. We're going to have to figure out how to live with this thing. 2022 will be an economic recovery year. It's going to require decisions that are focusing on, is it what we want, but is it viable and is it feasible, weighing competing interests. I don't see those conversations happening. Okay, Tom, I'm off my soapbox. Already late for a break, but Ingrid and Rick have been really patient, so I want to get to Ingrid real quick, then to Rick, then we'll go to a break. Amber Smith coming on from the chamber in just a minute. Ingrid, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Does it really make any sense to crowd a lot of people into a store in a short period of time rather than to spread them out over a longer period of time?
Yeah, Ingrid, I think it's a great point. I don't think it does. I think you're exactly right. And that was one of the concerns is that there are a lot of people who, you know, work late. We're talking about holidays. We're talking about business. We're talking about when restaurants make a lot of their money. There's so many different interests here. And yeah, if there's no real difference health-wise between 8 and 10 that I've found, I'm not sure. It just seems very negligible to me, and a very non-data-backed, non-science-backed conversation. Let's go to Rick here. Ingrid, I appreciate your call. Rick, thanks for hanging on the line. Love to hear what's on your mind this morning.
Yeah, good morning. Just real quick, the consequences of any decision made by mayor and council have to be looked at from a much broader perspective over a long period of time. And this particular mayor and council have been have fluctuated into the degree as they're not looking at the long-term consequences of the financial impact to the city tax base. And they have to be willing to weigh short-term and long-term, and also have a plan of action to be able to deal with the shortfall of the economics that they're going to face coming up next June and July.
Rick, I think that's so on point, and I think you and I are speaking the same language this morning, is these are decisions that have to be made in competing interests of both private, public sector, long-term, short-term. Rick, I couldn't agree with you more, and I'm not sure that I'm seeing that kind of decision-making process happen. We'll see if my next guest, Amber Smith, CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber, agrees with some of the stuff we've been discussing. She'll be on in just a minute here after our last break. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 10:30 The Voice.
Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Thursday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
The Why I Love Where I Live team has one wish for you this holiday season, to find joy wherever you are. As a local retail store celebrating community, what better way to end a difficult year than by buying your Christmas gifts locally and giving friends and family reminders of what makes Tucson and our community great. From books to jewelry to clothing, hats, gifts for kids, and everything in between, visit the retail store this holiday season at 267 South Avenida del Convento or online at whyiloverewhereilive.com.
Hi, my name is Shanae with HR Resolve. Whether you are a self-employed individual or hire up to 35 employees, HR Resolve is your small business corporate office. We are locally owned, providing everything from general administrative and accounting services to payroll services and hiring. I started out just me, grew my company right here in Tucson, and want to help you succeed too. Call me and the HR Resolve team at 520-867-8384 to get started.
What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And we are back, and joining us on our live line is Amber Smith, the president and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, Amber. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Good morning, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Yes, well, I reached out a little bit before the emergency session yesterday got started because I received your statement ahead of the meeting, the chamber statement on the suggested curfew. For those of us who haven't seen that statement yet, could you summarize, as the council was looking at an 8 p.m. and then eventually decided on a 10 p.m. curfew, give us your concerns ahead of the meeting and any remaining thoughts or concerns here as we head towards Friday.
Well, first off, I want to emphasize that we are very concerned in the COVID numbers. Our position in not being supportive of a curfew is not reflective of the chamber and our member businesses not thinking that this isn't a serious situation, because consistently that has been the case. One specific thing is we've actively been working with Pima County and the Pima County Health Department on educating businesses and restaurants on how to create the safest environment for not only their own employees, but patrons themselves. We've worked in tandem in creating what those guidelines and restrictions look like. So it really is reflective of how serious we believe this is. And we, of course, have our healthcare community that we want to be able to support any way that we can, and we respect their viewpoints of concern and ultimately their goal to lower transmission. Our ICUs are becoming full, but something they emphasize is the greater concern is the ability to be able to staff their facilities, not necessarily the number of ICU rooms.
Right.
So that was why we came out so strongly on this position.
We're with Amber Smith again this morning, Tucson Metro Chamber. There was something in your statement here. You wrote that 30 to 55% of sales of the local restaurants who have made up your Tucson Restaurant Advisory Council occur between the hours of 7 to 10. And along with that and the 50% occupancy requirement, your concern was that a combination of those two factors would probably result in additional closures. Do you feel better about the fact that it was moved to 10 p.m.? And are you advocating with the county to keep it there as well? Or what does the process look like from here?
Well, 10 p.m. certainly is better than 8 p.m. However, those that are most impacted are the restaurants. And we simply have not seen the data showing that transmission is occurring from restaurants. And I think that that's the underlying piece to all of this, is why are restaurants being targeted so severely as the industry that has to be the ones to close? So that is correct. Absolutely. When you are already under these restricted guidelines of occupancy or making 25% of what you historically would make, there's a lot of factors going into that. Your overhead is much higher because you're having to staff additional security and managers to make sure that those protocols in place are being implemented. And then, of course, the reduction as well in patrons. So mathematically, it would be extremely challenging to try to close those gaps between revenue and expenses. And it's just realistic that businesses are absolutely going to close.
Yeah, part B of last night's emergency meeting was an allocation of additional CARES Act dollars with a desire to, in some way, support both the businesses and the workers that might be impacted by this. Do you think the council went far enough, or are you still in review of that? Or what do you think about that part B of this whole conversation?
Well, we are certainly appreciate and commend the council to have the foresight in putting together that $70 million package. However, on that small business relief, it's $3 million. And granted, they increased it by 50% at the hearing in response to concerns. The original number was $2 million to $3 million. And then there's some ancillary funding as well that can support businesses. But what we requested is a study to show how that curfew will genuinely impact those businesses that are going to have reduced hours. Having the 10 o'clock curfew means that employees are going to be concerned about being home by 10 o'clock. So really, they're going to have to close potentially even earlier. So what are those dollars that these businesses are losing? What is that amount of payroll? Just one of our restaurant members has $160,000 payroll a month. Well, when you look at that in the hundreds and hundreds, really thousands of restaurants in our community, is $3 million really enough? And I don't know. I would say that it's not, but we would really like a survey to be conducted and actually make some decisions based on data, because with thousands of employees impacted, that $3 million will go quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know the council talked as well about how to maybe ease some of that fear of those employees who are feeling maybe a need to get back by 10. I hope that there will be a little bit of flexibility in terms of our public servants who may be enforcing this. And I think it sounds like there might be, but I'm not sure what you're hearing. About 2.5 minutes left, Amber. And one of the key decisions, the caveats made yesterday, was to eventually match the county. So the county is having an emergency meeting on Friday to discuss much the same thing. If the county were to move this up to 9 or 8, the city has pledged to move the curfew up as well. What is your conversations at the county level looking like now, the next 48 hours?
The same conversations we had with the city council is really articulating how this impacts those businesses. The county has actively engaged with the chamber since the beginning of COVID, placing us on several of the different task force as part of COVID, and we're actively also supporting their Ready for You campaign, and that's supporting both restaurants and businesses and outlines measures in place, articulating what those safety standards look like. So we hope the conversations will be productive because they have been very collaborative in recognizing the impact on business and reaching out, gaining feedback as to what can we do to help.
Amber Smith, Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce, about 40 seconds left. Do you want to do a quick plug for State of the City?
Sure thing. Tonight at 5 o'clock, State of the City with Mayor Romero will be held virtually. You can go to Visit Tucson, City of Tucson, or the Tucson Metro Chamber Facebook page to check that out. And it'll also be on Azteca in full Spanish at 5 p.m. as well.
Perfect. Amber Smith, that is today. I knew today was going to be crazy busy for you. I'm very grateful, especially grateful for your time coming on the program to share your initial feedback and thoughts on yesterday's decision. And thanks for your advocacy for our businesses here.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon. Amber Smith, President CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber of Commerce. That does it for us today on the show. Tomorrow, I will be in Oro Valley for the show, opening of a great new incubator entrepreneurial center in Oro Valley. I'll tease it. More to come later. We'll see you on Thursday. Take care, Tucson.